All right, here we are, episode 11 of the Bomber Brothers podcast, the penultimate one, I guess, before the playoffs, because we'll be sure to have a wild card preview episode. But here we are, number 11, the Brett Gardner episode. And Sean, fittingly enough, as we record episode 11, Brett Gardner, number 11, is starting to maybe turn it on a little bit, and it couldn't come at a better time as the Yankees are once again getting struck with the injury bug coming down the home stretch of the regular season.
Let the Gardy triple party begin. I think he's had enough rest, so you know he's definitely fresh. And with the hamstring injury to Hicks, he's filled in great the last two nights, made a great catch, has a couple triples, a couple ribbies. And he looks rejuvenated, and he looks hungry. I think, you know, he's a proud veteran, and having had his job taken away, and I think he understands, probably rightfully so. He looks like he's out to prove that he's still got something left in the tank with this limited opportunity.
Yeah, I think we're definitely seeing that fatigue probably played a heavy factor in his struggles recently when he was playing every day, when Judge was hurt and Stanton was nursing a tight hamstring, and you couldn't take Gardner out of the lineup because for as much as he was struggling, he was still better than Shane Robinson. But now you have Andrew McCutchen, who has just been fantastic. I mean, a walk, a single, a hit by a pitch today. So that OBP for McCutchen in the leadoff spot just continues to climb. But with McCutchen there, now you're able to get Gardner some rest. And now in an event like you have going on right now where Aaron Hicks is hurt with that tight hamstring, looked like he aggravated it trying to beat out a double play ball last night. So now maybe some fresh legs, Gardner is putting it together, which would be huge for the postseason, especially if, you know, say Hicks is still a little lame on that ankle and hamstring and needs a night off. It would be big for Gardner to step up and be able to swing the bat and come up with some big moments like he did in the playoffs last year.
Absolutely, and you never know. I mean, you get a late game situation where you take out either, you know, Sanchez or Andujar for defense, and then the game might get a little closer and you might want to pinch hit at some point in the wild card game. It'd be nice to know you have a rejuvenated Gardner to go to in a big spot, because he's come up with so many big hits over the years. I mean, look no further back than the wild card game and the division series game 5 last year. And you know, I think it's kind of a shame the way things went this year. And I know when we spoke to Mark Simon, he touched on he expected to see Stanton and Judge in the outfield together more this year, and that would have given Gardner the rest that he needed, but that wasn't able to happen, and Gardner wore down probably as a result of that.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Mark Simon is our guest this week from Sports Info Solutions. Had some great stuff on the current state of the Yankees defense and what to expect from them moving forward and in the wild card game, where defense is absolutely going to play a pivotal role, especially with two more pass balls from Sanchez last night. And even with all those struggles, you've heard Boone and Cashman stay behind Sanchez and say, you know, he is going to be behind the plate for the wild card game. And games like Monday night are ones that make you worried about that. But then a game like tonight is when you realize, you know, just why they are so behind Gary Sanchez, because of the upside and because of what he's shown 2 years leading up to this one, which has been a slump. But he has a 3-run home run today. He had another RBI single to drive in Stanton. So, you know, you're seeing on Tuesday night as we record that, you know, the reason why the Yankees want to stick with Sanchez and see him in the lineup for that do or die game.
Right. And not that the A's are built around small ball, but even if you, let's say the Yankees had a small lead late, I don't think putting Romine in is the move there, because that just opens up the running game, where one runner on is basically, if you have a runner that can steal a double, because Romine's arm is not nearly what Sanchez's is. So you're really, Sanchez has 17 pass balls on the year. That's really a big gamble to think, okay, in the, let's say the last three innings of the game, I want to prevent that pass ball, but I'll give up the stolen base. I mean, that's a risky gamble.
Especially when you've seen a sample size of that tactic being used when Sanchez was hurt, and opposing uh-huh. team's first instinct was, okay, we're going to run all over Roman. We're going to run all over Higashioka. I think the first 10 base runners who attempted a steal when Sanchez first got hurt all succeeded. So the arm is obviously far inferior to Sanchez. And then you look at, you know, at the plate instead of just behind the plate, and Romine is a backup catcher for a reason. He doesn't hit for power. You see Sanchez and that potential tonight on Tuesday night, and you'd like to see that in the wild card game in a potential scenario where a Yankees team that lives and dies by the home run, and looking, you know, hopefully more and more likely that it'll be at Yankee Stadium, where home runs come at a premium, and Sanchez is one of those guys who can drive balls out of the park. And you look at these two teams, the Yankees and the A's, is now the Rays, as of yesterday, Monday, have been officially eliminated. So it is going to be the Yankees and the A's, just determining where it will be played. If it's remained status quo and is played at Yankee Stadium, it could be a battle of home runs given the ballpark and the fact that the Yankees have hit the most home runs in baseball and the A's have hit the third most sneakily, have been a really power-hitting team. So if it turns to a slugfest, the Yankees would love to have Sanchez in the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's times where guys have down years and the right thing to do is to move on from them in the big spot. You know, I think what Joe Girardi did in the 2015 wildcard game, moving on from Ellsbury and playing Chris Young.
It was a weird line. I mean, they really stumbled into that wild card game. You had Rob Refsnyder in the starting lineup.
But like, I think that's the right move. But a move like this where there's not really a good option, you know, Romine's a very capable backup catcher. I know that. I think we come too harsh on Romine because so many people clamor for him, but he's a very good backup, but he's still a backup. And I don't think he's a better option than Sanchez, even with Sanchez having the down year, just because of that potential, that one swing of the bat can change everything kind of moment, in a game like this, that's really something that you need to rely on.
Yeah. But I mean, and to be fair, those like the pass ball could be a difference between going home and moving on to the ALDS, and just that one advancement of a runner in a tight game that plenty of playoff games tend to be, especially in a do or die situation. That could be the difference. And sticking with the defense, that could be such, you know, a key factor in a wild card game where, you know, balls need to be kept in front. Errors have to be kept to a minimum, especially in big spots when the season is on the line. And now you have Didi Gregorius, really the anchor of that infield in terms of defense. There's a lot of shaky areas around Gregorius in terms of infield defense, especially Andujar. So, you know, the defense shouldn't take too much of a hit until Gregorius comes back, because Hechevarria is a great defensive shortstop. Obviously the offense will take a bit of a hit when Hechevarria is in the lineup, but the good news is Gregorius seems like he thinks at least that the wrist is feeling a lot better and they'll know more tomorrow. But if for whatever reason Gregorius is out for the wild card game, I mean, that's a devastating blow for the Yankees.
Absolutely. I agree with what Mark Simon said. I think you leave Torres at second and put Hechevarria there. Hechevarria is a defensive upgrade over Didi. But if you were to move Torres to short, he looked really bad there when Didi was hurt and they put him there. And I think it's a situation where, yeah, you upgrade the defense on the left side there a little bit. You lose a huge, huge bat, especially in Yankee Stadium with Didi's lefty bat. We'll see what happens, though. I mean, it's just a shame, right? It's the run that clinches the playoff berth, and a head first slide again. We see this all the time. And now Didi's got torn cartilage in his wrist. And I'm done guessing with wrist injuries for this year. So I think we're going to get an update tomorrow on Didi. And we'll see how that cortisone shot worked. And hopefully it is as good as he's saying it is and he's able to play. But wrist injuries are scary. You know, we've seen it not just from Judge, but throughout the majors.
Yeah, and hopefully it's improving. You saw Monday night he had that big wrap around his wrist during batting practice, and he looked like the Shocker from Spider-Man with those big things around his hands. But today when he was fielding ground balls in BP, he was wearing, you know, a much smaller wrap around his wrist. So hopefully things are improving. And like you said, Hecheverria is actually an upgrade defensively, but I think it's the lineup that could suffer. You know, despite the fact that Hecheverria did go yard tonight, and we have John Sterling's call for him now, it's Mamma Mia Hecheverria, which I think is actually one of Sterling's best right now in terms of current Yankee home run calls. I'm a fan.
Yeah, I definitely approve of it. It's not one of the obvious ones where you would have thought of it right away. I feel like the Judge ones were very, you know, you knew they were coming, and
yeah.
And this one was pretty interesting.
And another interesting scenario the Yankees would have to play out if Gregorius isn't ready is Neil Walker, because like you said, like Mark Simon suggested, keep Gleyber Torres at second. He had some issues playing shortstop when Gregorius was on the DL with that bruised heel, which is interesting because shortstop is Torres' natural position. But you know, then you have a bat like Neil Walker who can also contribute. He has a triple in the second game of the series against the Rays, so it becomes interesting. Do you keep the steady defender Hecheverria at short, or do you try to get Neil Walker's more versatile switch hitting bat in the lineup and maybe move Torres over to short if you're worried about scoring runs?
Yeah, I don't know. I like I like Neil Walker's bat, especially at Yankee Stadium, but he's another guy you could look to for a defensive replacement late in the game, especially over at third base. He's, you know, he's a solid infielder. So I think it's more – depending on the pitcher, I would say it's probably more important to have the steady shortstop defense there with Hecheverria rather than the upgrade that Neil Walker would be over Hecheverria's bat.
All right, so Didi is one injury that the Yankees are keeping a close eye on. Another one, which we briefly touched upon, is Aaron Hicks, who is another huge loss. I mean, his power numbers haven't been what they were earlier in the season, but he's still consistently getting on base, one of the best walk rates in baseball. He draws some of the most 3-2 counts in baseball, so that's a key bat that the Yankees need in the lineup, not to mention an electric arm out in center field, and he can cover a lot of ground, but that might be compromised with his, you know, he fouled the ball off his ankle, which didn't look good at first. Personally, I was amazed he was in the lineup the next day, and then you saw him stretching it and trying to roll it a little bit when he reached base the following game, and then he tries to beat out a double play. He goes down. MRI showed there was no tear, so that's obviously encouraging. So it's a wait and see on Hicks right now, maybe just a couple days. But if the Yankees can't get him back in the lineup, that's just another blow to an outfield that seemed so rich in depth on opening day. Now here we are at the end of the season, and the Yankees are having trouble just keeping their starting outfield in one piece.
Right, but I mean, like you said, Hicks, you know, he seems to think it was just precautionary. He's saying he wasn't going to pull himself from the game, but Boone wanted to pull him. And I think they did the right thing by taking him out, giving him a couple days off. You really don't want to play around with the hamstring, especially a guy that, I mean, obviously that ankle's got to be bothering him. So, you know, he's going to be favoring one side, probably not running in his usual form. So get him off his feet, let him heal up. If he does miss more time than he's saying, then, I mean, you got to hope Gardner's up to the task, and it looks like the last two nights he might be. But yeah, Hicks is quietly one of the best center fielders in baseball. I mean, with the way he plays defense, his patience at the plate, the Yankees have a lot of these guys that are kind of unsung, whether it be McCutchen or Hicks in the outfield.
It's actually interesting you bring that up, because just today an article on 538, I think it was Travis Sawchuk, wrote an article, and the headline was something to the effect of "Who needs Bryce Harper when you have Aaron Hicks?" And it was basically just a breakdown of how valuable Hicks has been since the beginning of the 2017 season. I think in terms of WAR, he was something ridiculous, 11th in the league or something like that, and which is remarkable to think about. But you watch him every day, and he contributes in the field. He has that power ever since he became more pull happy, and he's has great discipline at the plate. But Just what are your initial thoughts on that? Obviously, Harper, you know, for a while it seemed like the Yankees and Harper were just a foregone conclusion. Now maybe not as clear as before the season started, and you know Harper's up and down season hasn't made it any more clear either. But personally, I thought maybe that's a little rash to say Aaron Hicks is going to keep the Yankees from going after a guy like Bryce Harper. But you know, he does bring up an interesting point that Hicks is much more affordable and maybe gives the Yankees an opportunity to spend that potentially $300 million elsewhere.
Well, I actually did see that link on Twitter, and that's why I mentioned that about him being one of the top center fielders in baseball. Nobody really talks about it, but I mean, first of all, let's just give credit where it's due. Cashman made a tremendous trade, trading Hicks for J.R. Murphy or John Ryan Murphy. I don't think he's in the league anymore.
I think he's the backup in Arizona.
Oh, okay. So it was just a tremendous trade by Cashman, and we're seeing it work out. I think Harper is an overrated player. I mean, his advanced metrics do kind of show that, especially, I mean, this season he's been terrible on defense. And
yeah, I mean, he did have to make a positional change because of injuries, but yeah, it's been an adventure for him defensively. And honestly, you take away his 2015 season, which was just unbelievable, and he's still been a good player, but probably not worth the $300 million that he's likely going to demand, which is lower than...
I'm sure he's going to get $400. And there are players out there that are worth that, but I don't think Bryce Harper is one of them. I think he's a very, very good player, but he's not in the conversation of, you know, the Trout or the Mookie Betts of the game.
And meanwhile, Andrew McCutchen just reached base for the fourth time, and there's another reason why the Yankees might be okay with their outfield plans. Maybe they do go after McCutchen. There's been reports that they would like to bring him back, and he's definitely giving them reason to give him a hard look the way he's been playing.
See, I'd be interested in that, but it's just a matter of how many years, right? I mean, you know, the Yankees really shouldn't be concerned about dollars since, you know, yay, we're under 197. But let's think about how many years, because we don't want to create a situation where we have an aging player that we're relying on. We want to try to keep this youth movement going.
And speaking of youth movement, one of your Rookie of the Year candidates, Gleyber Torres, is yet another injury concern we need to touch on. He was pulled from the lineup today. He was initially in there and then was taken out in favor of Neil Walker. They said it was hip tightness. And they said he would have been able to go and maybe was available off the bench, but considering the fact that he missed some time with a hip injury, that's just yet another concern. And Torres hasn't, you know, he's had an okay September, definitely better than the way he was hitting when he first came back from the DL with the hip injury, but that's just yet again another concern for the Yankees that they'll have to keep an eye on for the next week, as we're exactly we're 8 days away from the wild card game.
This actually concerns me more than the Hicks injury, because correct me if I'm wrong, but when he went on the DL the first time, like a couple days before that, he sat one game and it was all like maintenance. Yeah. And then he played and then he was on the DL because it was actually worse than they let on. So this kind of worries me. I'll believe that it's nothing if he goes out there and starts playing and there's, you know, no setback or anything like that. So I'm kind of holding my breath on this one. When I heard that this morning, I'm like, I'm worried about this more than I'm worried about this more than maybe they're talking about around the team in general. If Torres can't go, you have a veteran bat in Walker and a good defender in Walker that can slide into second base. But what Torres has done this season has been very exciting, and I was really looking forward to seeing him in a pressure game. So we'll see what happens there.
Now, on the bright side, on the injury front, you have Aaron Judge has been back for a little while now. We talked about it last week, first impressions of him back, and he's shown just more of the encouraging signs that we were talking about when we last recorded. I mean, he ripped a 110-mile-an-hour line drive right back at Jacob Faria, who just
that was
made
scary.
Unbelievable catch. You were just happy Faria didn't get hurt. But, you know, you also had an RBI by Judge last night, and he's looking like he hasn't skipped a beat, putting together good at-bats, full count after full count. So I think, you know, knock on wood, and I don't want to jinx anything, but for right now, Judge seems like he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen the power really yet in terms of elevating the ball and getting it out, but he's definitely – he has his zone discipline down already. That hasn't changed. It doesn't seem like he's chasing. Doesn't seem like his timing is off. And it seems like he's okay with the fact that he's not really hitting the ball out. He's still staying within himself, having good approaches, and the home runs will come.
So now we have another Yankee who came back from injury, Aroldis Chapman, last night pitched, I believe it was the seventh inning. The velocity was down, but he did pitch a scoreless frame in a game that we need to stop and maybe give some credit to Aaron Boone, because he goes out and says it's going to be a bullpen day. Some people were starting to panic and were waiting to see a dumpster fire with Jonathan Holder as the opener. But Aaron Boone looks like he perfectly orchestrated that bullpen day and gave the Rays a taste of their own medicine. And what I find funny and ironic is we sit here after the Yankees won that game. They only gave up one run. And the conversation is, you know, Boone did a great job navigating through that bullpen day, but if just one of those relievers wasn't on their game and slipped up a little bit, let's say Chad Green gave up a couple runs and they lost, everyone would be killing Boone about his mismanagement of the bullpen. So it's just funny, and I think it should be acknowledged that, you know, while Boone has had plenty of problems this year, we need to say that I think he did a good job trying out that new method to give his starters an extra day of rest, and he got a win out of it, a much needed win to secure home field.
Yeah, I mean, I think, all right, so I mean, I know I'm a Boone hater, so to speak, so I think from a standpoint of the way he managed that game, it was pretty ordinary, because he didn't stretch out any of the relievers or anything like that. He did go to the guys at the right time. I'll give him credit for that. One thing I will say, and I wanted to just mention this because I know, and I don't mean to get off topic, but I know I've killed Boone most of the year. The game where they clinched, the Saturday afternoon game, I thought he managed those extra innings perfectly, especially the situation where they got out of the bases loaded jam. They put the walk at the right time and pulling the infield in. I thought that he handled that very well. So I will throw him that bone there. But yeah, I mean, yesterday definitely gave me a little bit of hope for if things go wrong in the postseason, he has a plan of how he can get through that game. Ironically enough, I think Sonny Gray was the only Yankee to give up any hits, right? He gave up two hits and one run, and that was
it. And he got the win.
And yeah, he got the win. So that's why the win is a stupid stat.
Early wins are very important, and DeGrom should not sniff the Cy Young because wins are such a crucial stat. Just ask Rick Porcello and his Cy Young award.
Pride in New Jersey.
Well, anyway, part of the reason why the bullpenning worked was because Zach Britton was on the mound to close it out. And, I mean, that sinker has been looking nasty lately. I think just as every day goes by, he's, getting back to where he was before the Achilles injury. And that could be a huge X factor for the Yankees down the stretch because, you know, they need – another arm to slide in for guys like Tommy Kahnle, who was such a huge part of the bullpen last year but isn't up to par this year. Chad Green has taken a little step back, which I think was to be expected given just how awesome he was last year. You know, he's still effective, but Zach Britton
can't really pitch
huge.
Two innings. Green can't pitch two innings anymore.
No, I agree.
That's kind of weird. Like,
I agree,
he was so good at that last year, and now he can't do two.
Yeah, I think – I don't know. He talked about how his role was different and that was tough to adjust to, but it does seem like that Green is only effective for one inning and just, you know, can't spend too much time out there for hitters to make adjustments. And that's fine. If Green can only be used for one inning, you saw, it worked yesterday. So if he's signed up for one inning in the wild card game and then you have Britton for an inning, hopefully Chapman's back for an inning. And, you know, that's over a third of the game right there. You get a few innings from your starter, and maybe not let him.
And Robertson, you haven't even gone to yet.
Exactly, and those are arguably your two most reliable arms in the bullpen right now. So, you know, the Yankees are in good shape. Of course, the A's have a solid bullpen of their own. So it's definitely going to be an interesting wild card game. And as I think it was Jane Lee, the A's reporter for MLB.com, said that the A's haven't ruled out a bullpen day in the wild card game, depending on where it's played. And it seems like if it's played at Yankee Stadium, they might lean towards a bullpen game because a lot of the A starters haven't had success at Yankee Stadium. So it's going to be huge for Boone to continue to maybe get over that hump of their struggles against teams that quote-unquote bullpen against them. He's had some recent success, so hopefully for the Yankees' sake that continues if that's the case in the wild card game.
Yeah, I mean, that probably is the way for Oakland to go, especially with their pitching situation. I mean, for one game, the wild card, especially with 2 days off before, it sets up perfectly to manage the game that way. So they'll definitely they'll be locked and loaded, and hopefully the Yankees can, you know, playoff game, there's a lot more pressure on every pitch. So hopefully the Yankees can wear out and kind of burn through the good part of their bullpen to the point where they're forced to go to either some of their weaker relievers in the middle of the game because they have to save some of the better ones for the end of the game. So hopefully the Yankees can wear through that a little bit. I'm interested to see how this works in the postseason for sure.
And forgive me, we were talking about Yankees relievers. I forgot to include Tarpley, who's looked really good the last two games. Maybe he comes in and faces a lefty or two. Obviously not enough sample size, but it's been pretty cool to see him come on and really, you know, really make an impression with just a couple appearances. Of course, I'm half joking, but
no, yeah, he's looked okay. But I thought we'd see more Sheffield too. I'm kind of surprised we haven't, but you know, hopefully after they wrap up home field, we'll get him in a couple extra games just to get his legs under him, and then next season we could see him unleashed.
So sticking with the wild card game, Luis Severino, one of the three candidates between him, Happ, and Tanaka to start the wild card game. And, you know, Severino, he looked really good his last two starts. It looked like maybe he was really on his way back to ace form. And to be honest, there were a lot of times tonight against the Rays where he still looked that way. He had that one bad inning, but
the second was pretty rough too, but
yeah. He got bailed out. He had some hard contact that was hit right at people, but just it's a shame because of how dominant, you know, he can be. But I think at this point I'm ready to officially write off Severino as a candidate to start the game. There's just not enough time left to see if he can get all the way back to where he was before the All-Star break.
This will be the last time we podcast before we know who the starter is. And I think there's three options, and I don't know if I can flip out about any of them, because if you start Tanaka with the way he threw the ball down the stretch, Boston game notwithstanding, and his postseason pedigree, I have no issue with that. If you start Happ with the way he threw against Oakland and the way he's thrown down the stretch, I have no issue with that. And if you start Severino, I don't think it's the right move, but at the same time, you know what he's capable of. I really can't flip out about it. I disagree with it, but there's like, I'm glad I don't have to make the decision, honestly.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough choice. I mean, but all of them have.
We've waited for one to emerge, and it looked like Tanaka, and then Tanaka got rocked by the Red Sox on Thursday. And I think tomorrow we'll decide it. In Boone's mind, I think if Tanaka goes out and has a big game, then Boone will start him. And if he doesn't, then I think it'll probably be between Happ and Severino. And I think Boone already knows in his head between the two of those who it will be.
It's hard to argue against Happ for me right now. He's been so great since joining the Yankees. He looked fantastic against the A's when he faced them as a Yankee. And as good as Tanaka has been recently, like you said, with the Red Sox start being an outlier, he's just the home runs, they scare you. And like we mentioned earlier in the podcast, the A's are among the league leaders in home runs. They have the home run leader in Chris Davis, and just one swing of the bat can change the entire game. Of course, we've also seen that the Yankees offense can pull themselves out of an early hole in last year's wild card game. So maybe it shouldn't be seen as a do-or-die choice, because the Yankees have such a deep and great bullpen and an offense that can put themselves back in a game with one swing. But it's also still very important to get a good start from whoever it is they choose, just because this is it. It's do-or-die, fair or not. And just Tanaka brings his own concerns because of the home run. So, again, like you said, I don't know if there is a perfect choice right now. I would definitely say that it's got to be between one of those three. Sabathia hasn't looked great lately. I think you can take him out of the consideration.
Definitely. So,
it's going to be a tough choice. But at this point, maybe I'm leaning slightly into the Hap corner.
Yeah, and like I said, I can't really kick and scream about any choice. It's a tough decision, and nobody's really distinguished themselves from the pack, in my opinion. But I mean, if anybody's been the most consistent, it's been Hap, and I think, yeah, he can get you through a couple innings, and then you can turn it over to the bullpen. And, you know, one thing I'll say, last year's wild card game, they go down 3-0. They come back. This A's team is not that Twins team. This A's team is more the Houston team that the Yankees ran into in 2015. This is a good baseball team. The Twins were not. They were inflated by their run differential was not good. They were, you know, the Twins can't play at Yankee Stadium, and they were an overrated team. But this A's team is a good team that's going to be a huge challenge for the Yankees.
A good team that's playing some of its best baseball right now, and if the Yankees are going to win that game, they'll have to play their best baseball, especially defensively, where they've had some struggles. We mentioned Andujar at the hot corner. So let's play this interview. We talked to Mark Simon, and he broke down so many interesting facts about the Yankees' defense and defensive run saves and all these things that are hard for the casual fan to quantify in terms of rating a player defensively. So Mark Simon of Sports Info Solutions, he's also the author of Yankees Index. He came and talked to us, and we'll play it for you right now. All right, we are joined now by Mark Simon. You can see him at Sports Info Solutions, formerly of ESPN. He's got a great book, Yankees Index, which has got all the information you could want on the Yankees. Mark, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, happy to talk some Yankee baseball.
Yeah, and you're a great follow on Twitter, especially when it's, you know, with defensive stats and metrics, which, you know, are always kind of complicated to measure, especially for the casual fan. So the first thing, you know, and this happened just hours ago, Greg Bird taking ground balls at third base before batting practice today. Just what's your initial reaction to that, and how Bird could possibly be used at the hot corner?
Whoa, that's my reaction to that. That's an interesting thing to try, I guess. I don't know his past experience there. That seems like a stretch. I've heard of stranger things. There's a precedent 50 years ago that the Tigers took their center fielder and put him at shortstop for the World Series. So it's not unprecedented to do something like that. But he never played it in the minors. He never played it in the majors, obviously. I don't know why they necessarily would think that he would be a good fit for it, but there must be something there. Aaron Boone's a smart guy, so I would, that's an interesting trick they've got up their sleeve if they're going to try something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the person they have manning third now, Andujar, while he can definitely hit with the best of them, I think he's down to -23 defensive run saves, and I know you tweeted about him back in August. What do you think the best strategy is to go with a guy like Andujar, where the talented bat is there? He's obviously athletic, but he hasn't seemed to take into the position.
Well, it would be such a crusher to pull him for Greg Bird at this point. I feel like you almost have to live with it and then take the idea of playing the caddy behind him, which is, I guess, Hechevarria, and hope that you can get seven innings where they don't hit the ball too much. The guy I would worry about pitching with balls being hit to him would be Sabathia. I did a whole piece on how half a piece on how Sabathia was hurt by the Yankees defense this year, and one of the primary culprits, in fact the primary culprit, was Andujar, just with bad throws or with muffs or with other things going wrong. So for CC, they might have to, maybe that's where the Greg Bird plan fits in. With the right-handers, you can probably take a little bit more of a chance on it and hope for the best. But he's an adventurer, but he's such a good bat, it would be really tough to take him out of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, before Voit came up, I definitely thought that maybe he would transition to first base, because it seemed like the Yankees are kind of fed up, or not, maybe not fed up is the wrong word, but they're running out of time to see what Bird offers them over at first base. I don't really know if he can play third. And you mentioned that CeCe's been really hurt by the Yankee defense, which I think right now is pretty middle of the pack when you look at all the stats, but that's really pulled up by their outfield in terms of, guys like Judge, who's phenomenal in right field, and Gardner, who just made a great catch Monday night against the Rays. But even, I think Torres is, in the negative in terms of defensive run saved, and Didi makes some really nice plays, but, he does things like slip and fall down sometimes.
Yeah, he's pretty middle. Falls on his butt.
Yeah, he's pretty middle of the pack too. And now he's out. What do you think the Yankees will do to deal with Didi's absence? Do you think it's worth moving Torres over to short, or is it better to upgrade at short with Hechevarria, just keep Torres where he is at second base?
I would be inclined to keep Torres where he is. What little we've seen of Torres at short, I'm looking at it now. Five errors and four misplays. We categorize misplays as plays that weren't scored errors, but that certainly could have been scored errors. To have nine of those in 147 innings is not good. I would be a little bit wary of that. Whereas you kind of know what you're getting with Torres at second. He was really good at the start of the year. He's kind of evened out, I guess, so to speak. He's a little to the positive. He's someone that is valuable because within a shift defense, which the Yankees like to put to use, in fact, this is what makes him valuable. He can make odd angle throws better than a lot of other guys. So he's made some plays in shifts, and he's made a couple of running catches too, like behind second base on line drives, where I would feel more comfortable with him at second base than I would at shortstop, and I think I would be inclined to go with the more shorthanded Hechevarria there.
Yeah, that's a good point in terms of his ability to kind of throw across his body and everything like that. Definitely reminds you a little bit of the way that Cano used to be able to field that ball and handle that.
That's a good comp.
Yeah, thank you. And then I guess the other thing that's really going on with the Yankees defense is Sanchez, obviously, and I know that's kind of been a storyline all season. You wrote back in July that Roman is probably the best defensive catcher in the best backup defensive catcher in the big leagues, and I'm kind of wondering, he has two more pass balls tonight. Is it getting to the point where the threat of his bat, not even his bat, because he's not hitting, is it starting to be negated by his defensive struggles, where if you had a one game to win, would you rather be putting Romine back there or having Sanchez there? And I know that sounds like a crazy thing to say, but just, you did write that article about him being the best backup catcher, so.
Let me give credit. One of my colleagues actually did that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
His name is Casey, but no, that's good, because I've worked with him on it, so I know what the story was. Again, I feel like that one goes to who pitches in the wildcard game. Because if Tanaka is pitching, you know that there are going to be a lot of pitches in the dirt. Or if CeCe, who probably wouldn't be starting, is pitching, you know that there are going to be a lot of sliders in the dirt. And you need Roman's blocking ability, which is as good as anyone's in baseball, to block those pitches. And the difference between him and Sanchez, that could... A guy going first to second, that could lead to a run in a important spot. and against, Oakland, and that could be problematic in a one-game scenario. I think if it's Severino pitching, I think I would be more inclined to go with Sanchez. But it's a tough call because you've been waiting all year for the bat to show up. I remember my friend Katie Sharp wrote an article for The Athletic about how Sanchez's bat was better than it looked at, you know, the 180 batting average, you know, and the expected numbers were much better, but it's never come. It's always been in this 180 hole that he's been in, and I think that's a really tough decision, and I don't know that I would make it until I know who I want my starting pitcher to be.
I'm glad you brought up Tanaka. He's a potential wild card game starter, and he's also, I think, one of the best fielding pitchers on the Yankees and maybe one of the best in the league. Doesn't get a ton of credit for his ability to play his position, but you know, what's your take on Tanaka in terms of getting off the mound and fielding his position, and who do you think on the Yankees may be the best fielding pitcher on the staff?
Oh, I like that. I like that as a call. He has 5 defensive runs saved this season. 2 years ago, or I guess 2016, he had 7, which was second in baseball. This year, he's 5th. That's good. Yeah, I mean, he has range to both sides, too. It doesn't matter if it sits to the right of the mound or the left of the mound, which, if I'm not knowing how he pitches, makes me think that he follows through well, which is probably a fundamental tactic that was taught to him in Japan, certainly. And I believe Luis Severino had good defensive run save numbers, too. I'm actually punching them up as we speak here, just because I don't want to give you an uneducated answer on this. Yeah, Luis Severino had 4 defensive runs saved, and he had them early, and he was good, if I remember right, on comebackers that were hit hard. His reflexes were good at pulling those in. But I think you're right in that I would take Tanaka over Severino in terms of pitcher defense, which, as you said, doesn't get recognized very much.
So we've touched on a lot of Yankees defensively. In terms of, you know, your research and your work over the course of this season, is there a certain statistic or a certain performance by a Yankee that has surprised you the most over the course of this season?
I think, well, going back to early in the season, their performance in shifts was really, really good. They were one of the teams that got the most value out of it. That petered off. Their defensive run save numbers, their total right now for this season, I know that on like a site like FanGraphs, it would say 13. We include another element to that, shift performance, which is another 21, gives them 34. They were in the 40s. They were on the verge of being the best team in the league. They tailed off at the end of the season, but the shift defense was really good, and it goes back to Gleyber Torres making those plays from odd angles, throwing balls from weird spots in the ship look. In terms of surprise, I think we know that Judge is good. I think we know that Gardner is good. I think Romine's emergence this year as a clear, really, really, really good defensive catcher is something that they should be very pleased with.
And how about Giancarlo Stanton, a Gold Glove nominee in right field last year with the Marlins, has played some left field, which took some getting used to, obviously also dealing with a tight hamstring. What's been your take on Stanton defensively this season?
So it's funny with him. He has a lot of good in his glove, and then he'll have enough bad to just kind of not quite even it out. He'll usually wind up to the positive. This year, he did wind up to the positive. He's had 5 defensive runs saved at the time that we're talking about this. He doesn't make errors. He's made 1 all season. He hasn't played a lot in the field, and I was actually surprised that they didn't play him more in the field. I felt like that they should put Judge and Stanton on the field at the same time more often, but they didn't. It's a small sample this year. In the past, like, he can go back and get the ball in the corner in a big ballpark if he has to, but every so often he'll have one kind of drop where he's chasing a ball at an awkward angle and the ball drop and then bounce over his head and turn into a triple, and he gets defensive misplays for that. So I guess in the postseason, I would say maybe be a little wary of that if he plays the field, but they've shown a tendency not to play him in the field.
All right, that's Mark Simon of Sports Info Solutions. Great stuff, Mark. Very interesting, of course, and everyone should check out his book, Yankees Index, for more interesting stuff. Mark, thanks again.
We got it.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
All right, that was Mark Simon, and great stuff. Glad he was able to come by and talk to us. But one thing that I think we both were interested in is where he said that his decision on the wild card game catcher, which, you know, isn't really a necessary argument given the fact that the front office and management has made it pretty clear that Sanchez will be the catcher. But just for argument's sake, he said he would consider Romine if it was Tanaka pitching. But as we both noted before we came back, Sanchez has pretty much looked at his best when it's Tanaka behind the plate. And I think the ALDS last year was a perfect example of that. Sanchez, for whatever reason, despite that nasty splitter from Tanaka, just seems to be on his game more so than any other pitcher that he catches.
It's so weird because you figure Tanaka would be the worst one to catch with the way everything's in the dirt. And I think he catches Tanaka the best out of all the pitchers he catches. He always looks the best when Tanaka's there. I don't know if maybe because it's in his head, like, I have to be on my game today. And then so he's just super focused. But, yeah, I understand the point that Mark was making, that Tanaka's usually in the dirt and everything like that. But it's weird. Like, Sanchez, like, turns up when Tanaka's pitching. So that was that's a weird thing that happens with the two of them. But, I mean, otherwise I understand, where he's coming from and whatnot. Definitely some interesting stuff, and Mark's a great follow on Twitter. He always interacts with people and everything like that. Even when he was at ESPN doing like the K-Zone stuff, and he's just a great follow, and he seems like a great guy, so I was glad we could get him on.
Yeah, definitely very friendly with his time and great information that he gave us, and we're thankful for that, and we'll have a couple more guests next week. And before we go, maybe a little leap back in time as we record here on Tuesday, 4 years ago today, honestly, right around this time, where it's about 10:15 on Tuesday, 4 years ago, right around right now, we were in the upper deck watching Derek Jeter say goodbye to Yankee Stadium in probably the most Jeter way you can possibly come up with, hitting that walk-up single. And I mean, my first thought is just, how the hell has it been 4 years already? It's just crazy how time flies.
Yeah, I mean, I remember so much about that day from, like, just being at the state, like, having trouble getting to the stadium because there was an accident on the bridge. I know you were there at, like, dawn.
I wasn't taking any chances. I was there. I was in the city probably around, like, noon for a 7 o'clock game.
There was a huge accident on the bridge, and we got there, and there was, like, no parking. And I think I went to the most games I ever went to that year just because I wanted to take in as much Jeter as I could. I knew you were, living in North Carolina and couldn't at the time. So I was trying to do, like, work for both of us. And I always talked to this one parking attendant every game, and he happened to be there, and he saw there was no room left. He moved his car and let me park in that spot. So we got into the stadium. Caroline and I met up with you and Mom after we took our picture outside the Jeter mural on the back of the thing, and the game happened. And when he hits the walk-off single, I don't remember my reaction very much. I know I was, like, hanging on to you and Carolina because I was between you two, and I think I might have fell down, but it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was you hadn't heard the stadium like that in a long time.
Whole game, it felt like a playoff game.
Yeah, it really did, and ironically, it was one of the only games of Jeter's career where they weren't in playoff contention. They had been eliminated, and they certainly didn't seem like it.
Wasn't that his only home game where he was ever eliminated?
I think it was
in 08. They didn't get eliminated until when they were in Toronto, I think. Or I think they were in Toronto when they got eliminated in 08, and then in 2013 he was not on the active roster because
already shut down.
So I think that was the only home game that he ever played that meant nothing. But at the same time, it was so sick because, I mean, the pregame stuff was, the usual kind of corny videos. But, I mean, because, you grow up watching him, and it's moving because, that game I knew I was going to miss Jeter, but I've never been a huge, like, Jeter stan, so to speak. Like, I always appreciate him, but he wasn't my favorite player when I was a kid. It was always Tino, and then he kind of became my favorite player. I really appreciated all the memories he brought, just watching games together. and just, you know, all the times going to see him and stuff like that. I was just like, well, think of this one person created all these great memories for us. And that was really cool to be able to say goodbye.
Yeah. Created so many to the point where I think I remember standing in the upper deck and him coming up to the plate after Gardner bunted over Richardson, and almost just kind of knew like it was about to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, this, I know this is going to happen, but that's too unreal still. Right. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, Derek Jeter is where fantasy becomes reality.
Not my favorite call, but
yeah, the Gary Thorne one is incredible. Yeah. So is the Ricky Ricardo one in Spanish, and the Bob Costas call is really, really good too. But yeah, and the double in the first inning. I mean,
yeah, you thought it was gone for a second.
Yeah, I was jumping up and down like that was cool, and it's you know, it's sad to see the heroes that we had when we were younger move on, but you know, 4 years ago, it gives you, you know, it kind of lets you live in like fairy tale land where you can see guys that can do this kind of crazy stuff and have these fitting endings. And, you know, that was really the last one, right? I mean, you saw Mariano get taken out in this almost perfect way. You see Pettit pitch a complete game in his hometown, in his last start. You know, we really were spoiled with that group. And I think, you know, what makes us so passionate and what makes this team so frustrating is that we want that for this team, right? And we see that the talent is there for them to kind of create those kind of special memories for us and for everybody else. And, you know, we just want that so bad. So sometimes that bleeds into frustration when we think they're not living up to our expectations.
Yeah, like you said, you can see the blueprint of that dynasty being replicated again with all the young talent, young proven talent already. But another big part of that was that those Yankees, for the most part, stayed healthy. So hopefully the Yankees that are hobbled and banged up right now can get back to health for the wild card game and make another run in the playoffs. And we will be back to preview that wild card game next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Sean, for joining me once again, and we'll be back next week for episode 12 and the final episode before the playoffs get underway.
All right.